This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. A new chapter has opened in the story of the Aurora Theater shooting. In the last hour, alleged killer James Holmes made his first court appearance in Arapahoe County. The legal side of this has been on the mind of Aurora's police chief, Dan Oates, who's remained tight-lipped when asked for details of the case.
The most important thing is that there is justice for these victims, and that justice will occur in a courtroom. So whenever I say no here, it's because there's a higher reason, and that is to make sure he is prosecuted correctly.
This morning's court appearance was an initial advisement during which the defendant was advised of his rights. And that's about it, says a court spokesperson. The filing of charges, an arraignment, and a plea will happen down the road. Let's talk about that road for James Holmes with Associate Professor of Law at the University of Denver, Sam Kamen.
He will almost certainly plead not guilty. Most defendants in most cases begin by entering a plea of not guilty. They can always later plead pursuant to an agreement with the prosecutor, change their plea to guilty. This is not a case where the factual guilt of the defendant is going to be the big issue. Really, this will be a question of punishment. And the real question, the specter sort of hanging over this case, is the death penalty.
That is to say, there's not a lot of doubt here. This process, I suppose, whether it makes it to trial or not, is not going to really be about eliminating doubt, but testing
right. And
the
Ryan, you know, I want to say it's really important to remember that this is assuming that all the facts that are being reported currently are true. I have no reason to doubt those facts, but you know, we don't want to try him before his first arraignment. But if the facts bear out as they seem to be, proving the defendant's guilt will not be the prosecution's biggest problem.
A very good point. Thank you for bringing it up, Sam. So if this is really a question of figuring out what punishment to mete out, walk me through that. What determines in Colorado whether someone gets the death penalty?
Sure. We have a system that's similar to what exists in most death penalty states. In order to be eligible for the death penalty, the defendant must be found guilty of a Class 1 felony, in our case, first-degree murder. And one of the things that makes a killing a first-degree murder is that it's done with deliberation. So that means that it's thought out in advance, it's planned in advance, it's not a spur-of-the-moment killing. Certainly, there seems to be evidence for that in this case. If and when the defendant is convicted of first-degree murder, the question then turns to sentence, and there are only two sentences available in Colorado for first-degree murder. They are death and life without parole.
Death and life without parole. And can you give us a sense of what percentage falls in which camp? In other words, when there is a first-degree murder finding, how many are funneled, if you will, towards life in prison, and how many are funneled toward the death penalty, capital punishment?
Sure. Only those cases where the prosecution seeks the death penalty is the death penalty on the table. And a study I've recently been involved in shows that that happens in a very small percentage of first-degree murder convictions. That is, most cases of first-degree murder are not charged as capital cases, those cases where the death penalty is an option.
And that study is in Colorado or nationwide?
In Colorado.
In Colorado. Is that true for other states, that the balance is that or not?
I don't have the numbers on all states. I think that Colorado is certainly a state where we use the death penalty quite sparingly, right? The last execution in this state was 15 years ago. We have never had more than a very small handful of people on our death row.
If prosecutors have the real discretion in charging someone with capital punishment, what tends to drive that kind of decision?
What drives the decision is statutory aggravating factors. So we have 17 factors that, if proven, make a defendant eligible for death. He must be convicted of a first-degree murder, and he must have at least one aggravating factor proven to be true. If that is true, then we give to the jury the question of whether the aggravating evidence outweighs the mitigating evidence in a particular case.
Now, do me the favor of explaining what you mean by that.
Where would you like me to start with that? Should I do the aggravating factors?
Sure, and then the mitigating.
Sure. So the aggravating factors are set forth in our statute. We have 17 of them, which is a very large number compared with other states. And some of them, certainly, when you review the list, seem applicable in this case. One is that multiple people are killed in a single incident. One is that the defendant, in killing one person, has created grave risk of death to others. Another is that the killing is heinous and cruel. Lots of factors, at least in this case, seem relevant.
And then mitigating factors, I gather, would be the tension in the other direction on behalf
exactly.
of the...
Exactly. There are facts that, while they do not provide the defendant with a defense, make his crime, let's say, more understandable or less culpable. Here, we're generally talking about facts such as the defendant's past mental illnesses or defects that don't amount to insanity, but that make him less able to tell right from wrong or less able to control his actions. This is where issues of abuse or neglect generally come up in a capital trial. What I wanted to say at the outset is we don't know any of that about this particular defendant. We know almost nothing about him. So what we have is the horror of his crimes. That's quite clear. What we don't know is anything about him individually, and those are exactly the factors that a capital jury, if we got to that stage, would have to weigh.
And that I suppose a prosecutor weighs in deciding which punishment to pursue. I imagine maybe it doesn't work this way, but a prosecutor sitting down with a list of aggravating on one side, mitigating on the other, and then just looking at the balance.
I think that's exactly right, that when the system works best, the prosecutor is doing that beforehand, that she looks at the killer and the crime and says, this is one of the worst of the worst. This is not a run-of-the-mill killing, if such a thing is imaginable, but this is someone whose culpability rises above your average killers. And one thing that's difficult is that the prosecutor may not have the case of mitigation in front of her when she makes that decision. What she's looking at is the crime and the factors surrounding it, maybe the defendant's criminal record. What she doesn't have in front of her is the facts pertinent to the defendant.
We've talked about trial. We've talked about a plea deal. Is there any other potential outcome?
The only thing I can think of, and here I'm simply speculating, is the possibility that a defendant would be, because of insanity, incapable of standing trial. That is, if a defendant can't understand the charges against him, doesn't know why he's being tried, it is unconstitutional to put him through a trial. We saw this with Gifford's shooting in Arizona. The defendant, I believe, was hospitalized rather than put on trial. The possibility of a trial still lingers, but first the defendant has to be treated to a place where he's able to understand what the proceedings against him are. Now, I have no idea whether those factors will even be relevant in this case, but that's the only other possibility I can imagine.
When you talk about the Giffords shooting, this is of the congresswoman and others in Arizona.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for walking us through this, Sam.
Oh, my pleasure.
Sam Kamen is an associate professor at the University of Denver's Sturm College of Law. James Holmes, suspected of gunning down moviegoers in Aurora, made his first court appearance this morning. Formal charges and an arraignment are still to come. We'll be right back with Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio.